Golf Smarter number 149 for October 21, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Legendary golf writer and journalist Al Barco.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for joining in for another conversation on the Golf Smarter podcast. You know, last week I talked about various social networking sites and asked you to search me out. And thanks to those of you who found me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Now, since we got the largest response to Facebook, I've started a Golf Smarter group at Facebook.com. If you're not a member of Facebook, just go check it out, Facebook.com. You can sign up very easily, and you'll have all kinds of new friends all over the world. Well, we're going to continue to use this experiment. We'll be posting videos, photos, commentary, and a whole lot more. I'd love for you to join in that conversation. This is one way I'd like to make it a little more group-oriented and get more people involved. They have a discussion board, and I posted a question for this week. The question of the week for the Golf Smarter group is, which club are you most comfortable with and why? I've already had a couple of entries in that. We would love to hear from you. Personally, I'm trying to get to 125 yards in so I can pull out a 9-iron. What about you? Stay tuned to the end of the podcast today because we have exciting news about the 2008 People's Choice Podcast Awards and how you can help me out. Our guest today is Al Barco, prolific author of the following books: Golf's Golden Grind, The History of the Tour, Get Into the Dance Floor, An Oral History of American Golf, The History of the PGA Tour, The Golden Age of Golf, The Good Sense of Golf, The Venturi Analysis, The Master of Putting, Play Lower Handicap Golf, Getting Set for Golf, Dave Stockton's Putting. Do you get the point here? This guy has written a number of golf books. You'll learn through the conversation that he is also one of the first editors of Golf Illustrated and a writer for Golf Magazine. He was on-camera commentator for Inside the PGA Tour and the Senior PGA Tour Show. Have you ever seen the old footage of the original Shell's Wonderful World of Golf? He was part of that too and has great stories to share about it. The beautiful thing here is he has nothing to promote. I just had an opportunity. I met him on the putting green at the Sonoma Golf Course while waiting for the Schwab Cup Championship Media Day event a few weeks back. After introducing myself, we spoke for a few minutes, and I asked if he'd share some of his stories from his decades around the tour with us. We're very lucky that he agreed to do so, and I'd just like to say welcome to Golf Smarter, Al.
My pleasure.
Glad to have you on here. You're legendary in the writing business. Tell me a little bit what you're doing now and how you got there.
Well, I've been doing this for a long time now. I moved from Chicago, where I grew up and played a lot of golf, and moved to New York to try and become a big-time writer.
Not a big-time golfer?
Well, I'd given up. I played golf in college. I played NAIA, small college champ. We won a championship in 1959, national championship. And after that, I found I didn't shoot in the 60s enough, and I got interested in the theater and writing and other things. And so I just began to just play amateur golf after that. A little bit here and there. But I went to New York, and I had a script that I wanted to try and sell, a documentary on the tour, a week in the life of the tour. I was about 25 years ahead of time. Never got that sold, but I got it in the hands of the script, in the hands of the fellow who produced Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, the original TV show. And it turned out he needed a writer for the upcoming season in 1962, and I was hired, and that really got me rolling. And I did that for about 6 years, and then went to work for Golf Magazine and became the editor-in-chief for a couple of years, and then freelance, wrote a history of the tour and a whole bunch of books and a lot of articles. And then 1985... Golf Illustrated was bought by a big publishing company in New York. It had been reduced to a 4 times a year black and white all instruction, and they decided, the fellow who bought it had made a great fortune with Ladies Home Journal and some other magazines. So he was expanding, and they bought Golf Illustrated, and they wanted to make it into a real full scale, like a Golf Digest and a golf magazine. And they hired me to be the editor, and that was the most fun I ever had. We made it, we really made it work. And unfortunately, the publisher expanded too much. And so he had to close down, and so they shut down. He sold the magazine off. I worked on it periodically and still do. I do instruction articles with various pros for Golf Illustrated. But that's a rough sketch of...
That's pretty impressive. And you talked about when you were young, you were writing screenplay, you know, the ideas of doing this. But when did it become being a reporter versus being a writer of original text?
Well, I think when I went to Golf Magazine, then I became a journalist more than a... but it wasn't journalism in the newspaper style. I've never really worked in newspapers. I've done a few, you know, short pieces for the New York Times here and there and stuff. But mainly it's been magazines, and which is a different kind of journalism. You have room to spread out and write a little more and get a little more in depth. And that's what I've always enjoyed the most. But it's your report at the same time.
I get the sense that you define journalist and reporter as different breeds of people.
No, not really. A journalist is a reporter, but there are different forms of well, journalism is a little broader term. I think when you're doing a magazine, a monthly magazine, that's journalism, but it's of a different kind. I remember I hired a fella when I started at Golf Magazine as the editor, and I was looking for good writers, and when I went to different towns, I would pick up the newspaper. There was a guy in Charlotte, North Carolina, who was a very good writer, and I had him. I gave him an opportunity to expand a little, because a lot of guys who are good writers, when they write in newspapers, they don't get the opportunity to really develop stories. They have to be short and quick and in the American style. And he was happy to write for me. Lance Barrow, I remember his name. My goodness.
Very good.
And another fellow named Lee Mueller, who was writing with Ira Burkow for a like an Associated Press type of operation. Very good writer. And I talked Lee into coming over with me. I said, you can write, because he wanted to be a writer in the writer sense, not the journalist sense. And he won awards, and he really enjoyed it. He's back doing newspapers since, and so there's a difference in that way, and it's really the way I've always liked to write. I like to have a little room to develop ideas, and where you can't do that in newspapers.
And I got to believe the industry is very different today with the internet and blogging and podcasts. And what I find real interesting with the onslaught of bloggers is, unlike where you came from, there's no editors. These people write their own stuff, and there's no one going, you know what, kid, you need to learn how to write. What do you see as the democratization of media, where anybody can be published in that sense? How do you view that today?
Well, in one respect, what you've just said about the editing is quite true. It's awful. I don't know that. I think they just write it, if they put it through a spell check or not. I hope they do, but it doesn't seem like it. And no one is editing it. And all kinds of typos. And I mean, I always prided myself on my editing ability and picking up, you know, misspelled words. I mean, simple stuff like that. And in fact, I just did a piece for, it's going to be USA Today, a Ryder Cup supplement. I did a long piece, kind of a history of the Ryder Cup for them. And they sent me a copy of it, and there was a pretty glaring error in there. But I had time to make a change. I mean, I picked it up, and so I've always felt that was important. But that's not the case with the bloggers and all. They just wrap it off. But the more important part of that, I think, is that a lot of the people who are getting into it, they really don't know the game, or they don't know, journalism aside, and maybe they all are writers and whatnot, but they don't know their subject that well.
So when you say the game, you're not talking about journalism, you're talking about golf.
About golf, yeah, you have to know your subject, I think. I've always thought you did.
If you're going to hire them, they better, right?
Well, yeah, Well, yeah, they have to have some kind of a good feel for it and understand where the game came from. And I don't see that much anymore.
What about the kids on tour today? You know, the young people coming up on tour, do they know the game, the history of the game, and is that important to them? Or
it is too important to them. There are a few guys out there that understand a lot of that, but most of the players, no, the younger players, they don't. I mean, you mentioned Ben Hogan and Sam Snead, and I said, oh, yeah, those, I remember seeing their names in the book. I suppose I maybe sound like an old guy complaining about that sort of thing. Well, I guess when I was a young, when I was a young kid, I had a very unique experience. So when I grew up in golf, it was a Tam O'Shanter Country Club in Chicago, and they had these fantastic tournaments, the 2 weeks of great tournaments, and Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson and Sam Snead, and everybody came. It was and Peter Thompson from Australia and Bobby Locke. I mean, all the great players in the world came to Tam O'Shanter. So I grew up with that, and so I got to know that side of the game very early in my life, in my golfing life. But I don't know that the kids that are out playing the tour now have had that experience. Most of them are, you know, I don't think they've ever caddied. And if they have, it's been very little. They're pretty spoiled, you know. If they show some talent when they're 12 and 13 years old, they get right into teaching, get teachers, and they get, you know, they get marshaled through the whole thing, and everything is picked up for them.
Well, and now they have these academies.
And I mean, you know, you go to David Ledbetter, but, you know, it's terrifically expensive. But they get parents who do it. And you think of a kid like Michelle Wee. I mean, there's a tragedy, if not in the making, already done, because her parents, I mean, all that millions of dollars before she was four, she hasn't won a tournament. She's got all this money, and she's a wreck as far as her career is concerned, as far as I can tell. A wonderful talent, but I don't know that she's ever going to make it. And that's part of what the new system is. There's so much money in it now. And the advertising guys come along, and they've got this hot little number, this girl who can really play and very attractive, good swing, blah, blah. And they lay these millions of dollars on them. Now, what's the incentive for these kids? And besides that, she's got these...
Incentive is clear. Cash.
It's cash. And especially, I would say, I mean, I don't know for sure because I haven't been close to them, but the family, the mother and father, I mean, they're on her tail all the time. Constantly, whenever she's on the golf course, they're there. So this kid, and I've talked to some people who see her around Stanford, where she goes to college occasionally, and they tell me that when the parents are not around, she's a nice kid. She's funny. She's lively. She talks about a lot of different things. But as soon as the parents are there, boom, shtum, she's all quiet and stiff and into that robot kind of thing, I guess, that they get them into. And if you know, it's fascinating. You see some of these parents, you know, they used to talk about the soccer parents and all that sort of thing. Well, there's a lot of that in golf. In tennis, there was that a lot. And now it's the same thing in golf. It's too bad.
Yeah.
So the kids you're talking about in terms of history, they don't know the history.
So do they lack the respect for the game that it deserves?
No, I don't think you can ever not respect golf because, you know, you make... Well, it's going to bite you every time, yeah, no matter who you are. And that's always going to be the case. Even Tiger Woods, and he's unusual, and that bites him less, it seems like. But even he understands that.
He seems to have a pure respect for the game, though, and its history.
I think he knows a little bit of the history. Yeah, he's pretty bright that way, yeah. But, yeah, the game itself never changes. Even with the equipment and how far they can hit it and the beautiful greens they all put on the tour and all that and the great conditions, which are so different from what they were 40 and 35 and 40 years, even 20 years ago. I mean, people see the old Shell shows that we did. Shell's wonderful. Well, the original, these were the originals. We shot those in the 60s, and some of them were on pretty good golf courses. And everybody watching them, geez, the greens were slow. And you know these, and they were okay in that day. But now, my goodness, it's no one. I don't know how they guys miss putts out there. The grass is so good, you know.
I've always felt that Major League Baseball should be played on sand lots, You know, if these guys are that good, let them go out in sandlots and let, you know, the ball hit a rock and see what happens. Because you put 10-year-old kids out there in sandlots and the ball is going to bounce off a rock and hit them in the head. That's what a pro should be doing. Let the kids play in the major league fields.
I'm not so sure about that. But there is a dude. I remember a good buddy of mine, Elliot Asenoff, who wrote Eight Men Out. He just died recently, and I got to know Elliot for a while. And he was close to baseball for a long time. And I remember him telling me he was sitting in the dugout with Sparky Anderson once, and I said, "What's the difference, Sparky?" And he said, "The gloves. They're so much bigger, and it's so much easier to get." And, you know, you look at the gloves now. You see some of these great catches the outfielders make, those marvelous diving catches. Well, the glove is so big, it helps.
It's like a laundry basket.
Yeah. And they play on beauty. You know, the fields are smoother, but, I mean, I wouldn't want to put them on a rock pile. But, I mean, it's tough enough, but there's a lot of things in that respect that are, you know, different.
How's the state of the game? Not baseball, golf.
Golf, yeah. I think golf is fine. I think it's in good shape. I mean, business-wise, it's not good, right, as we speak.
And you're not talking about the tour. You're not talking about the tour. You're talking about the golf industry.
Golf industry, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a good friend in the who is with Lambkin Grips, and which is the second largest grip company. And they're worried because they're not selling, you know. And they're the guys who will tell you whether the equipment's moving or not, because every club needs a grip.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to be tough. Well, I think what's happened, two things. The economy is part of it, but golf is coming back to where it was. It was a hot sport for a while, and everybody, all the young people, got into it. Especially guys who were making a lot of money, smoking these big cigars, blah blah. And they all discovered that it's a hard game. It's a very hard game. It may be the hardest game we play. And there's no instant gratification. You're not sitting there with a beeper and changing a station and getting instant whatever. Golf is a tough game. And I think that turned a lot of people back from it, turned the young people that came into it. Same thing happened in tennis back in the 70s, that everybody got into tennis and they loved the clothes and the nice-looking girls and all that, because tennis had, before golf, had some nice-looking dames, you know. But they all took up the game and discovered, hey, this is a hard game. And so they all went out and played that other in the smaller court. And that's what happened to tennis, and that's the same thing that's happening in golf. Golf's a tough game, and you really have to be dedicated to accept the times when it just bites you in the butt, as you say. Tough game.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not being broadcast, so you can say butt or whatever you want. It's okay.
Yeah, sure.
You have covered golf for decades. You've seen probably some amazing moments in golf history. But for you personally, what stands out as being memorable moments not just necessarily your own, you know, hole in one for you perhaps or something, but, you know, moments that occurred that were like, this is something that I'll be able to tell my grandchildren about someday.
The first golf shot I ever hit. Why? Because I was astounded. I didn't even know anything about golf. I was like 13 or 14 years old in Chicago, and a kid came in the backyard, said, "Hey, I made $10 carrying these golf bags." I had no kidding. And he said, "Where?" I said, "Where?" And he sent me out there to Tamashanner in the suburb of Chicago. And waiting around the caddy shack to get the instructions on how to caddy. And the kid was hitting balls. I was a pretty decent athlete. I loved baseball. And to this day, I love baseball. I said, "Can I try that?" He gave me this club. And he gave me a ball, and I had watched him swing. And as I said, I was a pretty good quick study. And I hit the ball, and it went so high, and it went so far, I couldn't believe it. I said, "My goodness." And I was hooked. And I've hit a lot of bad shots ever since. But I have never forgotten that moment. And I remember I stepped off I mean, I was a little skinny little kid, and it was hard for me to get the ball out of the infield without hitting, you know, in baseball. And I stepped off that shot that I hit. I think it was a 7-iron. I said, damn it, I just homered out of center field in Wrigley Field. I just homered dead center with a 7-iron. I said, gee, this is great. But, you know, there have been others. And
what about when you're inside the ropes, though? Stories like that?
Yeah, well, you know, my very first shell show, the very first one I did, was the famous match between Sam Snead and Ben Hogan in Houston. That was my baptism under fire. Here are my two heroes as a kid, you know, Hogan and Snead. And the other was Nelson, but he was not so much anymore. And I said, here, I'm working with these guys, Hogan, who was always so difficult, you know, and I'm asking him what club he hit, because I had to report it up to Sarazen and the other announcer, George Rogers. And I even made a joke, and it was one hole, and I said, wedge, I knew the shot was going to be, and I said, a wedge, Mr. Hogan, and down the road, by the way, I should say, I learned that if you called him Ben, he was a little looser. He understood you weren't that intimidated, and he was a little better that way. But these were way back. I said, wedge, Mr. Hogan, and he said, no, equalizer. He was pushing his club. You know, his company had just been formed only a few years earlier. So he was looking, and he had this smile on his face, you know, give me a plug. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, we're here for Media Day for the Champions Tour, yeah. And it sounds like the press conference is about to begin. I really want to thank you very much for spending some time with me, and best of luck in the future, and we'll be reading.
Okay. My pleasure. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you very much, Al. That really was a lot of fun. What did you think? Do you like that, too? I mean, it's not always about golf instruction here. I look for all kinds of different stories. I hope you enjoyed that. A few weeks ago, in addition to mentioning it here on the Golf Smarter podcast, you received an email from me that nominations for the 2008 People's Choice Podcast Awards were being taken. This past weekend, they announced that more than 281,000 listeners of over 1,800 podcasts submitted entries. A panel of volunteers listened to all the submissions and announced the finalists. Thanks to all of you who followed up on our request. Golf Smarter Tips, Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, and the Good Dog Podcast have all made it to the finals. Unfortunately, Golf Smarter didn't make a final category, but that's okay. The other ones have. So here's our next step. Between October 23rd and November 6, 2008, you have the opportunity to vote 15 times per email address. Unfortunately, you can only vote once per day, but you have 15 days in which to participate per email address. I'll be reminding you about this on email blasts. We'll put promos at the end of all of our programs, the Golf Smarter blog, and again on Facebook. I'm quite aware that not everyone who listens to our podcast participates in our contests or submits questions or even responds to emails. That's to be expected, but if there's any way to encourage every single listener to put on your to-do list to vote for us at podcastawards.com, that's one vote per day between October 23rd and November 6th at podcastawards.com, I really wish you would do that for us. Now, here's the categories that we're contending for. Golf Smarter Tips is up for the People's Choice Awards and sports categories. Pretty cool. Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf is up for Best Produced Podcast and the sports categories. And the Good Dog Podcast, hosted by my wife Joanne, is in the general category. Clearly, there's a conflict in the sports category because we have two entries there. So I encourage you to vote for, hey, flip a coin here. Okay, Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf in Best Sports. And let's see if we can get the People's Choice Award for Golf Smarter Tips. Please check out our blog. Oh, and also vote for Golf Better in the Best Produced category as well. It's just the sports category we have a little bit of an issue. And we're competing against audio podcasts and video podcasts. So, you know, audio podcasts, when you come to production, is not something that's going to, you know, catch people's eyes. So we really need to get your votes out there. Please, please, please. Okay, please check our blog each day for updates about the People's Choice Podcast Award. And again, thank you very much for your continued support.
Now that I've asked for something from you, how'd you like to win something? Great. Go to golfsmarter.com and register to win an autographed copy of Tom Wishon's latest book, The Right Sticks. Deadline for entries is October 31st. We also have three copies of 15-Minute Golf DVD by Lance McWilliams. Deadline for entries to that is November 13th, 2008. So there's four books, three DVDs, and on Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, we have an Adams Idea Tech A4 Hybrid Fairway Wood for you to win. So we have club, book, DVDs, giving them all away. Deadline for entry for the Fairway Wood is October 28th. But of course, I urge you to always visit golfsmarter.com regularly, if for nothing else, to read the blog and see what interviews we have coming up. As for the blog, coming up on Wednesday's blog entry this week, Ken Sanford writes a review of Michael Anthony's Mental Keys Kit. He's been using it faithfully, listening to the podcast, and has a lot to say about it and wants to recommend to you what you should do with Michael Anthony. Now, Michael, of course, is our most popular expert on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast each week. He provides our mental game notes. We close this week not with a quote, but a warm and wonderful email that I received this weekend from Harold Jones of Mesa, Arizona. He writes, "Hi, Fred. My name is Harold R. Jones, and I'm 81 years young. I'm writing to announce that I scored my first hole-in-one on October 13th on the fifth hole par 3 at Painted Mountain Golf Course in Mesa, Arizona. I used a 9-wood. A 9-wood, and he got a hole-in-one. It was quite a thrill as I had three partners that I usually play with, and one of them was my great-grandson." I love the way he closes this. "I just wanted to let someone know." Next week, we're joined by PGA Championship Tour players Jim Thorpe and Lauren Roberts as they prepare for the Charles Schwab Cup Championship. If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Hi, this is Michael Anthony inviting you to join me on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast. Each week, I'll provide you with tips and insights on how you can lower your score using the Mental Keys unique mental training program. Are you having trouble taking your practice game to the golf course or making those pressure shots? Tune in, and I'll show you how to improve your mental game and lower your scores.
Golf Smarter Tips podcast is free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com.